This is Cindy Potkle speaking to Lynn Ronco on Saturday, November 26, 1983. We are sitting in the living room of a trailer located in Blairtown. It is late afternoon and it is cold and snowy outside today in Rock Springs. Okay, you want to start? Where were you born and where?
I was born November 10th, 1952, in Thermopolis, Wyoming.
Okay, and your family, do they still reside there?
Yes, my mother and father live in Thermopolis.
Okay, have they lived there all their lives?
No, both my parents were born in a little coal mining town north of Thermopolis called Gebo, spelled G-E-B-O, Wyoming. And they spent maybe the first 4 or 5 years of their life there, and then they moved to Thermopolis.
Okay, what type of jobs did your father work at?
Well, for the over 25 years, my dad owned and operated an underground coal mine about 16 miles north of Thermopolis. And he closed the mine down in about 1973. The federal mine safety regulations got too harsh at that point to operate the mine, so he shut it down. And he then came down here to Rock Springs and was a foreman for about 2.5 years at Stansbury Coal. But he quit the job here because he felt it was a pretty unsafe mine to work in, and he didn't want to work in it here. And it was a somewhat of a burden driving back and forth. He lived here through the week and then went home to Thermopolis during the weekend. After quitting his job at Stansbury, he went back to Thermopolis, and he's a warehouseman for the Rural Electric Association in Thermop. My mom has been a housewife most of her life. About 1974, 73 or 74, she started working in a bank and spent about 5 years in the bank in the loan department, and then she quit for a couple of years, and then she works for the Hot Springs County cable TV.
Okay, when your father was working here in Rock Springs, do you recall what he talked about it? Do you recall what you had in mind, what Rock Springs was like? Your impressions from...
Well, at the time my father was here, the boom, what they call the boom, so to speak, had pretty much leveled out. At the time, they didn't have the belt route in and the overpasses for the belt routes, and it was kind of difficult to get from one end of the town to the other, as I recall. That was one of his complaints. He basically centered most of his conversation about Rock Springs was he was unhappy and not being able to adjust to shift work, and just the inconvenience of driving home and back on the weekends when he was off.
And did you visit at that time with him?
Yes, I came to visit him. At the time I was living in Laramie, and I came to visit him, two or three times while he was here in Rock Springs.
And what were your first impressions of Rock Springs?
Well, when you drive along the interstate and you just kind of look down, and it was kind of seemed like somewhat of a desolate sort of place. Living in Laramie, it was much greener, surrounding area didn't seem like such an eyesore. But once I got into Rock Springs and met some of the people that lived here and everything, I enjoyed coming here. It was different, and They had the mall was going up, and it was, you know, an interesting place to go because Laramie didn't have a mall, and he got used to no trees and no grass.
Okay, what schools did you attend in Thermopolis?
I attended, well, for my elementary work, I went to the Hills. It was called Hill School. It was right on the hill in Thermop, an old red brick sort of structure about 2 or 3 stories high. And that was grades 1 through 4, I believe. And then I went downtown into another school district, or an area, where there was a 4th, 5th, and 6th grade, and the junior high was all in one building. And then I attended Hot Springs County High School for my high school education.
Okay, do you remember what type of vacation your family took? Did they ever go different places in Wyoming or out of state?
No.
To vacation?
We didn't spend much time vacationing around the state or out of the state, simply because my parents own a cabin in the Bighorn Mountains, approximately 26 miles north of Ten Sleep, Wyoming, and all of our summers were spent at the cabin. From the day that school got out till the day that school began, that's where we spent our summers. My father would shut down his coal mine during the summer, and he worked for the Forest Service in that area, so he was able to stay at the cabin. And I have never spent a summer in Thermopolis. I don't have any regrets about living and staying up at the cabin because I enjoy the outdoors and fishing and things of that nature.
Did you fish a great deal with your father?
Yes, my dad fishes a lot, and I'm a tomboy, so to speak, so I did a lot of fishing.
Okay, growing up in Wyoming, do you think that's what caused you to be outdoorsy?
I think growing up in Wyoming, if you're exposed to the outdoors, that at some areas in Wyoming, you know, you naturally just kind of fall right into, you know, doing outdoor things. And then if you have parents that are interested in outdoor hobbies, and then it's, you know, it's easy just to follow in their footsteps.
Okay, from high school, did you attend college?
Yes, I graduated from high school in 1971, and the summer of 1971 was my first summer that I spent away from the cabin in the mountains, and I went down to Laramie the summer before my first year in college and spent the summer down there with my sister. And I went from 1971 through 1975 in my undergraduate work, which is physical education with a minor in coaching and health. And from 1975 through 1976, I spent the 1 year doing some graduate work in physical education. After that, I went 1976, 1977, I went to the University of Kentucky, where I received my master's degree in physical education, but the emphasis is in sports medicine and athletic training.
Spending some time in Kentucky, what brought you back to Wyoming, and why are you still here?
Heat and humidity, for one thing. I don't think I ever really got used to the humidity. All of my family was in Wyoming, my grandparents and sisters and sister and brothers. And Kentucky didn't offer the type of things that I liked. I liked to backpack and ski, and I just wasn't able to do it in Kentucky.
And did you meet Jeff here?
Yes, I met Jeff in Laramie while I was going to school in Laramie.
Okay, and when you returned, you married him?
Yes, in August of 1977, we got married. And he was offered a job in San Francisco, which he took. And from 1977 through May of 1978, we spent in San Francisco. It had always been our aspirations to open up a sporting goods store in Laramie, and at that time, a good location for a building for the store became available right across from the football stadium, and we were in contact with some individuals that were interested in becoming partners in a corporation in a sporting goods store. So we decided to leave San Francisco in May of 78 and moved back to Laramie and spent 2.5 months getting started in opening up a sporting goods store, which we opened up in August of 78. It's called Stadium East Sports, and it was right across from the stadium.
And how long did that go on?
Well, we were the major shareholders in the store, and from August of 1978 through August of 1980, Jeff was the manager at the store. I was the assistant manager, so to speak. I was in charge of retail sales and retail buying and some team sales. It became increasingly difficult with our business partners because we had conflict of interest as far as type of inventory that we should carry in the store. So we had somewhat of a disagreement in the early part of August in 1980, and we decided then that it was best to resign our positions in the store. We sold our shares in the store, and we left Laramie and came to Rock Springs hoping to get good jobs in one of the mines or one of the plants around Rock in the Rock Springs area, Sweetwater County area, and to our original plan was just to work here as long as we could and make enough money to have enough money to open up our own store without any business partners.
Did you have any inside lines before you came to Rock Springs, knowing positions available?
At the time we came to Rock Springs, we didn't really know what positions were available in the different mines and the plants. My sister, Nina James, knows quite a few people at these various plants, but as far as having an inside track on certain positions or anything, we didn't. We applied at all of the plants, and Jeff got a job with Texas Gulf as a warehouseman. He is now purchasing agent for Texas Gulf. He got his job with them at the end of August 1980, and I got on with Stauffer Chemical September 22nd of 1980. We spent the year, 1 year working at these jobs, and then Jeff and I were divorced in October 1981.
Okay. Your job at Stauffer, how many years were you there before you were laid off, which was recently?
Well, I started in September 22nd of 1980, and I went, was employed by Stauffer through May 3rd of 1983 when they had the large plant layoff by seniority for the hourly people.
Do you think that was fair, the seniority?
Well, I don't feel that it's fair. Stauffer is a non-union plant, and supposedly one advantage of being a non-union plant is that if they do happen to have a layoff, they don't have to go by seniority. I'm somewhat bitter by the fact that I had what I feel and what many people feel, an excellent work record there in the 2.5 years that I worked at Stauffer. I had only taken 3 days sick leave. I felt very conscientious in what I was doing. There were often times on graveyard shifts that it would have been very easy to have called in sick when I had a cold or sore throat, but I felt that it was just easier to work than to call in sick, because their sick leave policy for hourly employees is, I think, somewhat unfair. I think that they left a lot of undesirable sort of people in the jobs that remain at Stauffer, people that are chronically late for work, that habitually are sick for little or no reason at all, and that sometimes they, well, they don't always, they're not always working in a safe manner. Oftentimes, I know that people out there take speed, smoke marijuana on the job.
How often does that happen, and is it done by a lot of people?
Well, I really wouldn't know what sort of percentage there is. I think that on a graveyard shift, people take speed because they don't get the sleep they need. I know that people, go off and will smoke a joint and will be high, and I did never do that. I don't use drugs or smoke marijuana, so I always felt that this was somewhat of putting other individuals in an unsafe working condition.
And was alcohol also used on the job?
I never encountered anybody that was drinking alcohol on the job. I know that people would report to work in somewhat of an inebriated state, and they managed to fool the foreman and the supervisors. I don't know about drinking on the job. I never encountered any of those.
Has your opinion changed as far as the union, and how do you feel a union would be beneficial? Would it have been beneficial when it came to layoffs?
Well, I've never worked in a situation with a union. I think there are advantages in having a union, in cases where you think you might have a specific grievance that you can take to the union. Union jobs are so specific in what you do. I was what was called the A person, A man, on the outside bulk loading crew. We loaded railroad cars, and my job was to close the bottoms of the cars, make sure they were going down the right tracks, set brakes on the rail cars, switch out cars with a switch engine. As things changed out at Stauffer, I then had to work inside as a bagger. I had to work as a loader, loading flatbeds and vans. I also had to load bulk trucks. I was also responsible for taking dust collector readings. If there was a union out at Stauffer, I wouldn't have been allowed to do the various things that I had to do. Therefore, there would have been more people employed. There would have been one person for each specific job. And when they had the layoff, there would have been a great number of people involved in the layoff. I'm not sure, had there been a union out at Stauffer, if I would have been involved in it.
Do you think they went seniority, the route of seniority, so they could lay off most of the females that have been hired within the past few years, who were hired on the basis of discrimination? to meet the standards?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what the percentage is of what, and I don't know if it's a cut and dried situation where a company has to have X amount of females, they have to have X amount of minorities. I do know that there were most of the women that worked out at Stauffer had in the hourly ranks were employed in the last few years, in the last couple of years, and so they were naturally affected by the layoff. The reason they went by seniority with the hourly employees, the company's reason is that they wanted to avoid any lawsuits as far as discriminating against a certain person as far as their work record goes. That was Stauffer's reason for the seniority layoff in the hourly ranks. I'm a little bitter by the fact that they went by seniority without regard to, as I said before, a person's work performance, their attendance record, their tardiness, things of this nature. Whereas in the salaried ranks, they went by merit. They laid off engineers by work performance and the merit. And I think that they should have done it one way for both salaried and hourly. Stauffer also, everybody has a personnel file, and if you screw up at Stauffer, you know, you'll get it'll be reported in your personnel file. The problem with that is that they never ever give you any sort of a recommendations as far as the good work you do. If you're a good worker, it goes unnoticed in a lot of respects. I've found out that it doesn't pay to be a conscientious good worker and with a large company like that, because it goes virtually unnoticed, and with, you know, nobody cares. They just want you to get your job done, whether it's good or bad. And
how many women, first of all, what is your position again? A, is it a laborer?
My position at Stauffer when I was...
Yes, when you were laid off.
Okay, at the time, I was considered an A class worker out there, or operator. When you first start out in Stauffer, you start out in the labor pool. And then, as openings become available either in the refinery or in the shipping department, then once you reach top seniority in the labor pool, you are moved either to the refinery or to shipping. I was moved to shipping. I had a choice at the time. There was an opening in the refinery and in shipping, and so I went to shipping, and I was considered the A person on the outside bulk loading crew. There's classifications both for refinery and shipping. A is the lowest, and then you have your B operators or B loaders in shipping, and then C operators in shipping, C operators in the refinery, and C loaders in shipping, and then D class operators in the refinery. And then they also have those classes for maintenance and electricians out there also. You start out as an A maintenance and then move on through to D maintenance.
What did your job involve when you were first hired?
When I was first hired, I was the lowest person in the labor pool, and the lowest person traditionally has had to take the job of being town runner. My job for my first 3 months at Stauffer was to get a company pickup, go to the different and various departments at the plant, and I would have to pick up, run errands for different people, pick up money or pick up the cash for the plant, sometimes that would be about $2,500. Go to a bank and cash a check for $2,500. I'd have to go to the various industrial supply outlets and pick up parts, pick up tools, you know, things of that nature.
In Rock Springs?
Rock Springs and Green River. I would leave the plant, I would get my instructions at the plant, drive to Green River and do my errands in Green River, come to Rock Springs and run my errands here. Then at 1 o'clock I was instructed to call back to the plant to find out if they had any additional errands they wanted me to run. If that was the case, then I would run the ones here in town. I would have to go to McFadden's Wholesale and pick up food for the kitchen out at work, TV dinners, things of that nature, coffee. Then I would go through Green River and run any additional errands that they wanted me to run there, and then go to the plant and go to the warehouse, unload what I had to, what was needed at the warehouse, go to the kitchen and unload the food at the kitchen, take the money to the receptionist, and I did that for 3 months.
And which time you went into shipping?
Well, no. I was a town runner for 3 months, and then they hired on about 6 more guys, and so I was replaced as being the lowest seniority person in the labor pool, and so the lowest man took over that job. I then spent about a week or 2 weeks shoveling ore under the headframes over by the mine, and then I was put on the garbage crew, which it wasn't really garbage, it was like going into the refinery and emptying the hoppers that had like used empty lime bags, empty slag, empty carbon bags. I had to go over to shipping, and sometimes we had to pick up old used pallets around the plant. We were just kind of picking up trash and garbage. And I was on the garbage crew for 3 months, and then in March, about March 18th, I was moved into shipping. March 18th of 1981.
And what was your position?
Then I was moved to a bulk loader, and my job requirements there was to close and seal the bottom of the railroad cars, set brakes on the rail cars, make sure they were going down the right tracks, switch cars around, take samples. Basically, that was about it.
How many women were in that department?
There were 3 women in the shipping department as hourly employees.
And how there many was men, approximately?
There were 4 crews with 6 people per crew. So there was 24 men, and at the time I started, there was 3 women. And one of the girls was on our crew. She was an inside C-class loader. She also was a bagger on our crew.
Being in a minority, were you ever harassed by the men, or were other females harassed?
I was never harassed, and to my knowledge, I did never hear of one of the women hourly employees being verbally or physically harassed by anybody. I mean, everybody teases everybody, but nothing was really directed in, you know, that sort of way.
How about your supervisor? How did he treat you? Did he treat you equally?
Oh, yes.
The verbal assaults, physical, sexual assaults?
My foreman was at first a little leery about me coming on the crew, a woman coming on the crew as the A person, because up to that point, any of the women that they had on the A as an A person, wasn't able to handle the job, and they transferred out of the shipping department.
On their own?
Yes, it's a difficult job. Oftentimes the rail cars come in from back east, and the bottoms are frozen open. They've been rained on, and they're frozen open, and it's difficult to close them. And it's a hard physical job. Plus, during the winter months, it's very cold, especially on graveyards. You're outside most of the shift, and it can be uncomfortable if you're not, you know, even if you're dressed properly.
Okay, I'll repeat the question. Did your supervisor treat you equally, did he ever harass you verbally?
My supervisor, after about the third day being with me in the shipping department, I think he realized that I could handle the job, and he treated me as fairly and equally as he would one of the guys. He always said that he wouldn't trade the two women that he had on the crew for any two men on the rest of the crews, because we held the shipping records in most bags bagged, most bulk cars loaded, most trucks loaded. Our six-man crew, or four-man and two-women crew, held all the shipping records, so he was pretty proud of the fact that he held the record, and in that record, two of his employees were women.
Was that recognized by the company?
It wasn't recognized plant-wise. It was basically recognized just within the department. And the supervisor and shipping superintendent were aware of the fact of what our crew did. But as far as a plant record, it wasn't recognized in that respect. As far as any harassment went, there was never any verbal or physical harassment towards me, either by the other members of my crew, the male members, nor from my foreman. I was basically treated as one of the guys. They at first, when I came on the crew, were very courteous and very conscientious about the language they used, but then once they got to know me, we used to trade dirty jokes back and forth, and we all got along real well together. And my foreman and I traded dirty jokes back and forth, and he would tease me and I would tease him, and so it was a mutual sort of, you know, reciprocal type thing.
Do you feel you're working in what used to be a man's world?
Well, up until 4 or 5 years ago, I think Stauffer, the majority of the people at Stauffer were all males. About the only females out there were the ones in the secretarial or clerical positions. There are still very few women out there at this point, but I don't think any of them have been out there longer than 5 years in the hourly ranks.
Do you feel accepted?
Yeah, I feel accepted by 90% of the people. There are a lot of older individuals out there that I had a difficult time sometimes getting along with, especially when I was in the labor pool, because they didn't feel that Stauffer was a place for a woman to be. They somewhat came from the old school feeling that, you know, women should be home, married with, you know, a house full of kids.
How did you make yourself acceptable to them, or did you not bother?
Yes, I tried to do the best that I could with my knowledge of what we were doing, and as I said before, I was a hard and conscientious worker, and they realized that after a while, and so they started to accept me as
being able to handle the job. There have been, you know, a number of females that just weren't able to handle the job, and I felt I had to go out and prove to the males out there that I could do just about as much as they could. Some of the physical part, as far as lifting things and everything, there's no way that I could compete with those. But sometimes I felt like I was competing to try to prove to them that I could do just as well good a job as they could, or better.
Were you ever injured in your job?
Yes, in 1981, September 1981, I pulled a muscle in my lower back, and at the time I was working on a double shift. I was about 4 hours into my second shift, and I was tightening the brake on a railroad car, something that I'd do maybe 20, 30, 40 times a day, and it was cold out, and as I said, I was into my second shift, and so I pulled a muscle in my lower back.
And did you see a company doctor or go home or what?
At the time that I was injured, it's always company policy that when you're injured, you are to report to your foreman, and at that time you make out an accident report. Well, at the time I was working, there was not a foreman on our shift, a shipping foreman on our shift, and so I reported it to the C loader, who was basically my superior at the time. I reported it to the C bulk loader, told him that I had hurt my back, and he told me to just to take it easy for the rest of the shift. The next day, I saw my foreman, and we wrote up an accident report, and I sat through one day shift, and I was told that if I felt like I needed to go to a doctor, I could go, but I had to let my company foreman and the shipping supervisor know before I went. That day at 4 o'clock in the morning, I was having real severe muscle spasms, and so I called up my foreman and I talked to his wife. He was still sleeping, and I told her to tell him that I was going to the hospital to see a doctor because my back was really bothering me. I went to the emergency room at the hospital. I was told by the emergency room doctor to go home, and I was supposed to have bed rest for a week. Well, when I got home, I then talked to my foreman and a shipping supervisor and told him what the doctor had told me. The shipping supervisor then told me he would call me back in a half an hour, at which time he did, and he asked me if I would consent to go to a company doctor in Green River. At that time, Stauffer was trying to go for a record of so many million man hours without a lost time accident, and they were trying to avoid a lost time accident in my case, so I agreed to go to the company doctor. I was picked up by a company vehicle in Rock Springs, driven to Green River, taken to a company doctor. At that time, the doctor told me that I was to be put on light duty, that I didn't have to have bed rest. He gave me a fairly strong pain pill and some strong muscle relaxants. I then was driven out to the plant, where I filled out another accident report. I was out at the plant for probably 1 hour out of that whole day. But since I did show up to work the following day of the accident, then it was not counted as a lost time accident. I was then put on light duty, and I had 2 days off, and then our crew was going into the graveyard shift. So I would come in on graveyards, and I would sit in the office for the 8-hour shift, and I did that for 7 graveyard shifts, and then through my long change, I went back to the doctor, and I had a release from him to go back to work.
What did you do while sitting in the office?
I tried to keep awake. I didn't really think it was fair for me to be sitting there in the chair sleeping while everybody else on the crew was working, so I would sit and talk to my foreman, and he'd tell me stories, and I'd tell him stories, and basically that's all I did. It was difficult because even though I was on a fairly good painkiller, I was in a little bit of discomfort, and the thing that irritated me was that the company tried to make it sound on their accident report that it was negligence on my part that I sustained this back injury. And once I saw the accident report that came out of the safety office, I disagreed with it, and my foreman also disagreed with it, and I insisted that a new accident report be written up showing that there wasn't any negligence on my part, because that would have gone into my file, and I don't feel that I'm an unsafe worker, and it would have indicated with the first accident report that I was.
Did they cooperate?
No, they were not very cooperative. They also wanted to pin 3 days off without pay on me, because at the time I was injured, I did not notify my foreman. Well, as I said before, we did not have a foreman on the crew at that time. The foreman was on vacation, and they were trying to cut back and save money, so they therefore did not replace the foreman on vacation with a relief foreman. They said that since we didn't have a shipping foreman, that I should have gone and reported it to a refinery foreman. But I was fairly new in shipping. I'd only been there about 6 months. I had never encountered any sort of an accident before, and I was not aware that that's the procedure that I should have followed. My foreman went to bat for me, and he fought for me not having a disciplinary action filed against me 3 days off without pay.
The way they covered up your accident, so it wasn't a lost time accident, that makes the do you think that makes the program worthwhile?
No. Out there, out at Stauffer, we have a safety incentive program. What they do is they will give you, start out with, let's say, 24 hours in January, and for each, let's say, sub-major accident, they'll take a half hour off, and you go through the year until the 1st of December. And the first year I was there, I think we had it went from 24 hours to 16 hours, and the company pays you a safety incentive, which is the number of hours that the company has times your hourly wage. Well, at the time I was hurt, they would have had to have taken off 1 or 2 hours for a lost time accident, so it lowered the safety incentive. It would have also raised, I'm told, if they have a lost time accident, they their insurance rates change, or they're raised. Oftentimes people work out there and they get hurt, but they're too afraid to report it because they don't want for them to be the cause of a lost time accident. I'm not saying that there's a lot of verbal harassment by anybody out there, but a lot of people will work and it'll go unnoticed if they're hurt, and it will go unreported because they don't want to be the ones that caused, you know, a decline in the number of hours, or a reduction, you know, or an increase in the insurance premiums for the company. It's easy in shipping. It's easy to smash your finger, you know, black a fingernail, or get a bruise here and there. You know, really don't ever write an accident report. The company said that company says you are supposed to write an accident report for something like that, no matter how minor the injury is. But oftentimes, you know, you work, you get bumps and bruises, and you don't really report it. But in my case, I was afraid that I would be out of work, and my insurance, my health insurance, didn't start for 2 weeks, and so I therefore wouldn't have been covered by anything, and I knew if I didn't report it, I wouldn't have been covered on workman's compensation, so I did. But the safety program is somewhat of a big farce out there. They brag about their safety record, where in fact it's kind of covered up in a lot of ways. The one thing that they couldn't cover up was the death they had last year on the stockpile, right at the end of December, 1982.
Is it safe to work out there?
Overall? I think it's relatively safe. Most of the time people are conscientious as far as, you know, when you're working with somebody. It's not safe when you get people, like in the case now, where there is a decrease in the number of hourly employees there, and the employees that are now working there are forced to work overtime. They don't have a choice. If you're the low man, low woman on the overtime roster, and there's overtime to be worked, and it gets down to you, if you're the lowest person, you're forced to work it. And now, the way that they're producing more, they're shipping out more, they're in more of a hurry, there's less people doing it, the chances of an accident are going to increase. But they don't seem to be taking that into consideration, and I don't suppose that they will until a major sort of accident does occur.
Okay, when you were laid off, you were given a couple of options. What were those options, and what did you choose?
Well, at the time of the layoff, the hourly employees had two options. We could either take, in my case, I'd been there almost 3 years, so I could have taken 3 weeks severance pay and also gotten 4 months health insurance, or I could have not taken any severance pay and was not eligible for any of the insurance, but I could be placed on a callback list for 2 years that was valid for 2 years. At the time of the layoff, we were given very little notice of it. We were also given very little time to decide what we wanted to do. At the time I was laid off, there were 30 people ahead of me where the hourly cut was made. There were 60 people below me. I tried to sit down and figure out the pros and the cons as far as taking severance pay. If you took severance pay, then you couldn't be put on the callback. If you wanted to get rehired at Stauffer, your only chance would be for them to call all the people back on the callback, and then you had to resubmit an application, and from them they would determine, you know, they would see whether you would rehire them or not. In essence, taking severance pay was like quitting the company. After a great deal of mental anguish and deliberation, I decided to go ahead and take the callback because I like the money that I can make out there. I like the benefits. I liked being on shift work, so I decided to take the callback. There were 4 people ahead of me out of the 30 took callback. The rest of them took severance pay. I was 5th on the callback, and there was only a total of 8 people that took the callback out of 90 hourly employees.
And at this time, you're number 1 on the list?
Yes, they hired 4 people back.
All males?
Yes. in October, and I was the fifth person.
Do you feel you were discriminated against?
Some days I think that, some days I don't. So, I'm really not sure. They Stauffer says that they will not replace, they will keep the numbers that they have out there constant. They will not replace any hourly people until their attrition rate decrease, and will have an attrition rate where their hourly employees decrease through either retirement or sickness or death or some reason. There was some attrition rate due to an automobile accident, a heart attack, one person quitting, you know, a couple other reasons. Stauffer decided to go ahead and call only four people back out of the eight. It's frustrating because I feel that the eight of us put our trust and faith in Stauffer, and you know, we showed loyalty to them. They in turn are, as I said before, shipping more ash out than they ever have, setting production records, setting shipping records. Business is booming. They're paying overtime every day. Hours upon hours of overtime. Forced overtime in many cases where individuals have to take it. They could replace, they could put, well, us four that remain on the callback and, you know, cut that down somewhat. Like I said, being a conscientious worker, being a good worker, being loyal to a company, a big company like Stauffer, it doesn't pay sometimes.
If you were to be on Graveyards tonight, could you go through and describe what would go on in your position, such as reporting to work? And
well, if I was to go on to Graveyards tonight,
23 degrees,
I'd be sitting here thinking and bitching, probably saying, oh my God, I don't want to go on Graveyards. Then I'd have to catch the bus at the Plaza Shopping Center about 20 minutes to 11. Get out to the plant right about 25 minutes after 11. Go into the change house, change. Walk over to the shipping department and give my relief. My relief would then tell me either that the brakes have been set above on the rail cars above, in the holding tracks above, and they have been set below on the holding tracks below the plant. That was one of the jobs of the A person on swing shift, was when the railroad comes in on swing shift, they take out the full cars and bring in empties, and that was the A person's responsibility, was they have to set the first three brakes on every track on the tracks above, plus the last two brakes, and then on the holding tracks below, they had to set the first eight brakes on all three tracks, so which was 24 cars. The railroad would set some, but you ultimately had to set some yourself. I would find out from my relief if what brakes were set, if the railroad was still there. If the railroad was gone, I would then, I would get my relief in the lunchroom. Then our crew, this is right about 20 minutes to 12. Take about 10 or 15 minutes to get dressed. Get your relief. Go over and sit in the lunchroom in the shipping department. Our foreman would come down and tell us what silo we were supposed to load out of, if we had any special instructions. I'd normally be ready to go, be out outside right about 5 to 12, right around 12 o'clock. I was responsible for the brakes, they say you can never trust the person before you whether the brakes were set. So if my relief said the brakes were set, then I was to go up to the tracks up above, check the brakes, make sure. Go down below and check the brakes down below. Come back to the shipping department. It was my job to run the car puller and to pull the cars into the tipple area where we were to load them. I would check each car for cracks on the bottom, bad bottoms, you know, any defects in the car. Then I would make sure the bottoms were closed and sealed, and I would have to record the car number of each car. And I would just kind of keep up with the upper crew, the top loading crew, A, the B and C loaders, which were opening the tops and checking for leaks up above. And then we'd move the car into the loading area, load it, send it down the tracks. That would pretty much go on all night long, unless we got done with one string of cars, and then we'd have to go up. My responsibility to get into the track mobile, take it up the tracks, and get a string of cars ready to bring down with the track mobile. You'd have to air the brakes up. We'd have lunch, as they call it, at 4 in the morning, and that was a half hour. And then once every graveyard shift, the 7 graveyards, we were to have a safety meeting. So we might have a safety meeting for a half hour, or if not, we'd go back out at 4:30. Load cars until about 7 o'clock, and then I would go and take the shipping pickup and drive down the tracks and make sure that I didn't have any leaky bottoms. If I did, then I'd fix them and come back up, and I had to lock out the switches so that nobody could come along and dump cars in on our string that we were working on. So I'd take my locks off of the switches and go back to shipping. It depended on dust. They put a new dust collector system in. Shipping department was in charge of that. We had to take readings twice a shift. So if it was my turn to take readings, I'd take a set of readings once before lunch, once after lunch. Then I would wait for my relief that would get there about 20 minutes to 8, take a shower, get on the bus. Bus leaves the plant at 8 o'clock, get to Rock Springs right about 15 to 9 in the morning.
Okay, when it's cold outside, real cold, do you have to go on and do your job, or what? Do you take any precautions? Why do you continue?
We have to, whether it's raining or snowing, sunshine, wind blowing 50 miles an hour, we have to load railroad cars no matter what. Two years ago around Christmas time, on a day shift, it was right around 35 to 40 below, and that was on day shift. The air was just crisp and still, as felt like you could just, you know, everything, it was just frozen. The wheels on the railroad cars wouldn't roll. You'd kick them out of the tipple and down the tracks, and they'd maybe roll 3 or 4 feet. They wouldn't even roll, so you have to get in the front end loader and push them down.
Do you drive the front end loader?
Yes, I know how to drive a front end loader.
What other machinery?
Big Ford dump truck, a big vacuum truck called a super sucker. It's used to, you can either suck up ash or you can suck up water with it, with these big hoses. I know how to run a machine called a track mobile, which is a small switch engine. Forklift, gas and electric. That's about it. Cushman.
It's been 6 months since you've been laid off. Why are you anxiously waiting to go back to your job when it's cold weather and knowing how cold it can get? What draws you there?
The money. One of the main reason why I came here to Rock Springs was because of the good wages that you can get in the plant or in the mine. If I were to go into my profession at this point, which is into athletic training or sports medicine, I'd probably make half as much as what I make now. I'd probably be happier with the job, but I'd be making less money, and so therefore I wouldn't be as happy because I wouldn't be able to buy or do the things that I want to do. Whereas now, the job isn't that bad. I enjoy the physical work. I feel like when I get done working out there, I've done a good hard day's work, and I come home tired, and I feel like I've accomplished something. I make good money. I'm able, therefore, to buy the things that I like to buy and go places that I like to go.
How do your parents feel about you being a laborer and also being in sports medicine, which is usually a male's role?
Well, my parents would ultimately prefer me to be in the field that I spent 6 years of college in. They feel, I think it's from the standpoint that it's much easier for them when asked, well, what is Lynn doing? I think it's easier for them to be able to say, oh, well, she's the head trainer at such and such school. Whereas up until May, they had to say, well, Lynn is a bulk loader in the shipping department out at Stauffer. It doesn't seem like it's too prestigious of a job. It doesn't seem